And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Hope everybody's off to a wonderful start of their morning here today. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, but really the question is, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today? I'm good.
You going to yell at some listeners today?
I can't say that I won't. Yeah. Can't say that I won't.
Let's hope. I'm here for it.
My mom called me after the show yesterday. She's like, you okay? Yep. All good.
That's the thing. I mean, it's great to get it out, you know? Better out than in, Shrek always said.
Feel fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all good. Don't hold it in, man. That's bad for people.
She was like, you got pretty mad. I was like, well, it happens every now and then, you know? You talk for long enough on a radio show, eventually you get mad. That happened yesterday.
It did.
I went back and watched
it. Long fuse.
Just because I wanted to see your face, and it never disappoints. You were just like, yeah, I think I'm going to sit here and be quiet for a second.
I should do that sometime. I never do that. Go back and watch.
You know, watch the film?
That would be fun. Yeah, I know. Yeah, right? Let's get in the film room.
Right, come on. I thought that's what you did before our pre-show meeting every morning.
Well, yeah. Well, but that's a different film.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's true. We got all kinds of different things we can watch.
Kaharsky supplies the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we want doing that.
Yeah.
Ian Safar, how we doing? Good morning.
Doing great. Thanks. Been beautiful weather out there this past week. Just getting outside. Oh, got my computer on. Sorry about that. But doing great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. It's going to get hot again this week.
It is going to get hot. Yeah. Wow. Now that you mention it. Jeez. You knew it was going to happen. Man, it's going to get back to the 90s. Okay.
Like, I think over the weekend, early next week, like high 90s. Like it's going to be hot. So it's like, all right. If you thought summer was over, it ain't. Yeah, Monday's high as 97. So
hey, there are 11 days left in actual summer.
That's true.
You know, so prepare accordingly. Wow.
That is true. We got a lot to get into on the program today. We'll be joined by Seth Emerson later this hour from The Athletic. We'll look ahead to Tennessee and Georgia. With him, an interesting piece from our friend David Ubben that we'll get into later this hour as well as it relates to kind of viewing through 2 weeks of the college football season, the first quote-unquote trade in college football history. We'll get into that. And then Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com will be with us later in the show. We will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him, his thoughts on week one against Denver, looking ahead to week two against the LA Rams coming up this weekend as well in the home opener. So we'll get into all that with PK later in the program. And we start on the Tennessee Titans. And I'm throwing the question out there, Joe. Is anybody this week prepared to actually help Cam Ward as they take on the LA Rams? Because I would describe the help that he got on offense against Denver, limited would be the word I would use. Very limited.
Kind word.
Yeah, it's maybe kind word on Sunday for the Titans against the Broncos. And, you know, you look at Ridley, the game that he had, couple of drops that were in there, not very effective in the football game. You know, looking through it, it kind of feels like he was the one that was supposed to get the ball on that screen there as well. So him not knowing where to go is not a good sign. And we've talked about that with him before, Joe, that was the complaint on him in Jacksonville. We had Mike DiRocco on our show, and he was basically like, yeah, you know, throughout most of the season, there was too many times where Calvin really just didn't know where to be or what to do, and that was a problem. And it felt like that was a problem with him early last year. And then eventually he got it figured out. And you were hoping that wasn't a problem at all this year. And it turns out in the first game, it showed up. So that's where I start this conversation, Joe. What version of Calvin Ridley are we getting on Sunday? Because if they don't get top version of Calvin Ridley, that's not good news for the rest of their offense, the rest of their receiving corps.
Yeah, it's so surprising because the chemistry was there. It looked like it was clicking there on the same page. Totally different from a year ago. So you had to assume that was two things to me. One, the quarterback switch, and also just Ridley being here longer. Ridley, it's, you know, always emerging as a leader, as a captain, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have some, I guess for lack of a better term, some brain farts that you just can't have on a Sunday. Ridley also just had some drops. I think a couple that were absolutely on him that were bad drops. I think there may be a drop or two attributed to him that I might say Cam Ward threw the 98-mile-an-hour fastball when he needed to throw the, you know, 85-mile-an-hour changeup on one or two of those. One of them.
Don't tell D-Mace that.
Yeah, D-Mace, he's not hearing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not opposed to, like, if it hits you in the hands, you got to catch it. But sometimes I do think that, like, there's probably a little bit on both ends of a couple of those where it's like Cam could probably be a little bit better too. Like, I know we're going to listen to Orlovsky. I mean, I think he counted, like, he said 8 drops. There weren't 8 drops in this game.
His quarterback evaluated. You know, every time it's in the general vicinity.
Yeah, it's always drops. It's never like, yeah.
It's like a defensive back looking at the film and going through the penalties. Like, I didn't see one. I didn't see any illegal contact or anything.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. No, nothing at all. But Ridley is definitely overshadowed by his coach, among other things, from this first game. But certainly huge disappointment with his performance in this game. I don't think it's – and it's a disappointment because I don't think this is what he's going to be or should be this year. Now, I guess it should be for sure. Going to be – yeah, this is a big week for him to me. To establish himself as a guy who is he is the number one receiver on this team for sure, and he needs to like you said, I mean, help Cam, where he's the top guy, protection, and then Calvin Ridley. Those two things are, he has to have both of them to a decent extent, to a decent level to have any chance.
Well, we went through the numbers earlier this week on Ward, 12 of 28, 112 yards. He got sacked 6 times. He got hit 12 times. Quarterback rating of 54.5. Like, your traditional stats with him were not very good. And then you look at, well, there were some drops that you throw in there. The play that we've been talking about all week, had that been a completion and the coach challenged it, that probably helps your numbers on that front as well. So there's definitely different things you can look at. And all these different quarterback evaluators and former QBs and film evaluators and all these people have been looking at the Cam Ward tape this week. And for the most part, have walked away pretty impressed by what they've seen.
With him.
And Dan Orlovsky is among those people who have watched the film. He was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and talked a little bit about what he saw from Cam Ward on film. Here's what Dan Orlovsky had to say.
I was, like, blown away by his tape. I thought his tape looked awesome, dude. Like, he throws deep. Tennessee's got a guy. Like, Tennessee's got a guy. Like, this guy's talent of throwing a football is off the charts. They win the game if they don't have, like, 8 drops. I counted for, like, that play's awesome. That reminds me of, like, Joe Burrow-ish type stuff. The ability for him to thread the needle on some of the throws and just to cut the ball loose with what he's looking at, I was wildly impressed with. I mean, that defense is awesome, awesome, awesome. Awesome. And he made some throws that were, I mean, dude, I got drops on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 drops. He cuts it loose, man. He is crazy talented throwing the ball. Now, I'll give you two things. Like, yes, there are times when he's got to be like, Cam, you can't take that sack. Like, he takes back-to-back sacks that takes him out of field goal range. He did that in college. He's got to learn from that. He will, would be my expectation. And there are also some times that he fires the friggin' ball in there. And I'm like, could you have taken a little bit off to help him? He's got the touch. He does. This isn't there's some guys who throw everything as a fastball. That's not the case here. Dude, that throw's sick. I'm telling you. I mean, he's got, I wish I had B-roll for you guys. He's got 8 drops that you're like, yo, that throw is off the charts. So
that was Orlovsky yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. Pretty high praise from him in terms of his evaluation of Ward and what he saw on film.
Yeah, and again, like you said, Dan Orlovsky, I can't. There aren't too many, friend of the show, there aren't too many instances that I can recall of Dan Orlovsky saying, okay, let's talk about this really bad quarterback play. Now, he just did have a pretty critical evaluation of Caleb Williams.
Correct.
You know, and again, the continuing just not comfortable on schedule, and which that might drive Ben Johnson crazy, which
you hate to see it.
We're here for. Yeah, that'd be really tough. But so, you know, Orlovsky is, he's a quarterback. He's a former quarterback, as Lions fans know well. Tremendous play in Lions history when he thought the end zone was 20 yards deep.
Yeah.
But so he's generally, I think, positive, but also I mean, yeah, he's not the only one, too, by the way. I mean, there's a lot around there now that we've gotten into. Everybody's digested the film and gone through all 22s, people who do that stuff. They're liking what they see. And I agree. I mean, I said that Monday morning before we got into everything. I'm like, look, I mean, watching the guy with his poise, some bad decisions in terms of taking sacks, but with his poise and his arm talent, it's there. I mean, the talent is there for him to be a good quarterback.
And now, how much help is he going to get?
Yeah.
I agree. The talent is there, but the Titans offense as a whole has a lot of work to do. And we're going to get another test of the offensive line on Sunday against L.A. of can you hold up? Like, can you protect your quarterback? And I think the sack thing, I think as Ward's career goes on, he's going to learn that. Like, he's going to learn how to, like, hey, you can't take that sack in that situation. Like, I mean, I hope so. I don't know how quickly you learn that at the NFL level.
But that is like a Sean Payton.
It is.
It's like, well, so if you do that there, I'm going to.
Although Bo Nix's got his own things to worry about right now, based on what I saw the other day.
That's a fair point.
Not very good the other day. But I think at some point he's probably going to learn, you know, situationally, hey, you can't take that sack there. I also think, like, you know, one of the things that I think it was D-Mace that brought this up yesterday, too. And it's like, well, you guys did take a timeout right before that play on one of those sacks. And your coach has got to be like, hey, get rid of the ball here. You can't take a sack, and I'm going to call something that gets it easy for you to get rid of the ball. So that goes back into helping your quarterback of how much is your play caller helping your quarterback? How much is your offensive line helping your quarterback? I would say neither one of those were very good on Sunday. And when your number one receiver is dropping the ball, that does not help either. Now, one texter says, basically, I'm not that concerned about Ridley. Had a couple of drops. One of them was a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and he's being guarded by arguably the best corner in the NFL, which we knew going into the game there was a good chance he wouldn't produce that much. I mean, the numbers would tell you he didn't do anything against Sartan.
Right. And that's
it's not surprising.
I would have picked
that. To his point. But, I mean, as we've discussed, until the Titans have other options that step up and fill that void, that's how most teams are going to play the Titans is, let's make sure Calvin Ridley doesn't just burn us back there and we'll take our chances with everybody else.
Yep. So, Gunnar Helm, we saw something. I think we saw something. Chig had a little bit going. Io Manor, I mean, certainly had some opportunities. And, again, I mean, he actually made a heck of a catch. That was, indeed, by the letter of the law, a catch.
It was.
So, but that's got to be more of that. I do think that if you talk about, you know, you talk about young guys, you talk about the rookie class, you want to be positive about the Titans. Four rookies like started, I guess, if you want to consider that with DK, right? I mean, he's a starting returner. And I thought there were good things from all of them. I thought it was more good than bad for all four of the rookies who started, so that's a positive. Where does it go? What's the ceiling and all that? I don't know, but it was a good start.
So we're off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road. How can the Titans offense better help Cam Ward against the Rams coming up this weekend? Are they going to be equipped to do that against what is, again, a very good defense that they will see on Sunday? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game.
You touched on Cam. What were some of the things that you liked about him most and some of the things he's got to do better at moving forward?
Yeah, the things that I liked about him most was just the poise in the environment as a rookie in his first start against that defense. And he was under some duress, and I thought he did a good job protecting the football. He managed the protections. He managed the some difficult third downs. Would have liked to see us help him a little more around him. You know, we dropped, I think, four or five passes that would have helped us a lot. Would have made the day feel a little bit different, I think, had we connected on a few of those. His ability to manage the protection game was really impressive for a young player. I thought that was really encouraging. And then he never got rattled at any point, even though it wasn't certainly our best performance offensively. His ability to continue to battle and stand in there was impressive. And I think we're going to be a lot better for it. There's a lot of things situationally for him, you know, those fringe areas. Him and I, both from a play caller and a quarterback, got to do a better job of making sure we put ourselves in a better position. And not get knocked out of those. We did, twice, I think, get knocked out of some range there that we got to do a better job. So it was a good learning experience for me with Cam and a real thing, you know, calm plays for him in a live environment. But all the things that came out of it, I'm really encouraged by and excited about.
As Brian Callahan earlier this week on Cam Ward, what he liked from Cam Ward in week one. We're throwing it out there. How can the Titans offense better help him here in week two? Joe, I saw this stat yesterday from Ian Harditz of MB Fantasy Life. The most unrealized air yards in week one. So in other words, total air yards on incomplete targets. I'll go six through one wide receivers in the league. Tied for sixth, Malik Nabers and Jamar Chase with 75 each. Tyquan Thornton at fifth with 79. Brian Thomas Jr. at fourth, 81 unrealized air yards. Jackson Smith and Jigba at three at 83. CeeDee Lamb at two with 116. He dropped about 1,000 balls.
Jeez. And he had 120 or whatever.
There's a lot. At number one in the National Football League through week one of most unrealized air yards, according to Ian Harditz. Of total yards, incomplete targets. Alec Iomanner, 120 yards. Number one in the league.
No kidding.
To which the first response is from our friend Joey Garrison, who says, well, he wouldn't be first if Brian Callahan known the rules of throwing a challenge flag.
Oh, don't bring that up. Not allowed to talk about it. Okay, so just so I'm clear on that stat, though, so unrealized is just any target of a certain – this. That's the target. That's what
there's
the yardage
distance
would have been.
Yep.
Wow.
Number one in the league.
So is that – again, the fact that he actually made one heck of a catch on one of those would have realized how many air yards would have been realized of those 120 right there. That was about 40, maybe?
It's a lot, yeah.
Something like that, right? Yeah. Wow.
Would have knocked him down.
Would have chopped it down. Yeah. Interesting. So, I mean,
what does that tell you? I don't know.
Yeah, like, well, just for Iomanner, what does that tell you? Yeah. I mean, one thing I think we definitely learned is, like, this was not just some, like, yeah, put the rookie on the depth chart first. I mean, he's a starter.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he's better. Like, he's – and that's good. And I don't think that's like a, well, we drafted the guy in the fourth round, we better just start him. No. I think he's talented. I think he's got something to give. It's about where I stop because it's one game in. It's not like we saw tons of stuff in the preseason, but you can see it with him. Good size, speed. I think he runs routes pretty well. And he makes catches.
He does.
That are catches.
He does.
In the eyes of some.
In the eyes of some. He does. Here's the other big thing that I'm interested to see beginning today, and somebody on the YouTube chat's already brought this up. What is Latham's availability? It did not sound overly great from Brian Callahan earlier this week, who basically said that he's one that they're going to have to keep an eye on here. So what does that look like starting today when the injury report comes out? Because, look, they can't afford injuries in a lot of places. They really don't need one of their starting tackles to be unavailable in the second week of the year. That would not be a very good thing for Cam Ward in this offense.
No, and it's not great that this is what he's been dealing with. So then it comes right. And this happens so often, I swear. It's like someone's got a little nagging thing in the preseason. Then you play real football, and then, whoa, now it's actually a problem.
Yeah.
Because you don't really exert, strain, all the things with football in the preseason, like you do in a real game. And I know, he was upset on the sideline. He went back in, he came back out. You know, today I'd probably expect like a limited or no participation from him.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of, can you get to Friday? And I could see like a questionable maybe, and or worse, I don't know. But that's not good.
That would be bad news. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the lack of tackle depth immediately on Sunday when he went out.
Well, and again, this is – I don't know that this is a better defense than what Denver has. It's pretty good. L.A. Rams defense is pretty good. And I think yards and points, once again in this one, are going to be hard to come by. And it just makes it that much harder if you don't have your starting right tackle out there. Who, again, as I've told you many times, like, you're needing to see him take a massive jump this year and to be an elite player. So if you don't have him out there, that's a big problem. I don't know how much you're going to be able to run the ball against the Rams in this game. We'll see. I mean, you know, it was a low-scoring game between the Rams and Texans over the weekend. Both of those teams, I think, have a good defense. You know, the Titans, can they move the ball against this Rams defense? I think it's going to be a tough task there. So you need all the help that you can get, and it just it becomes that much harder when you're talking about not having your tackle there. So that's a big thing to keep an eye on this week if you're a Titans fan, is what does the availability look like for J.C. Latham? And if he's not able to go, how do the Titans overcome that? I mean, I'm looking at what Houston did on the ground, and they ran it 27 times, 114 yards, 4-2 carry. Not terrible.
That's not bad.
So is there an opportunity there? By the way, Nick Chubb, 13 carries, 60 yards. He was their leading rusher in that game. So keep an eye on that as the season develops. But, I mean, Stroud in that passing attack didn't do a whole lot. I mean, they had, 19 to 27, 188 yards, no touchdowns and a pick in that game against the Rams.
Yeah, the overall production suggests that you score more than 9 points. But still, yeah, I mean, the front obviously versing those guys, you know, they're
big problem.
Yeah. They're going to be very tough to deal with. So, if you don't have Latham, you know, then you're going to have to just help the right side all day. And then, so Dan Moore, you know,
yep.
Can you handle your area? And if not, then again, it's just going to look like very familiar lack of protection that we've seen around here for quarterbacks.
Yep, for sure. I'm with you. I thought Gunnar Helm showed some things on Sunday in that game. Can he take another step and continue to be productive there?
It sounds like, but I don't know. They kind of went away from him.
They did.
Towards the end. I mean, he's flashed on that first drive.
I agree.
And nowhere else to be found.
I agree. I'd find the way. I'd target him more. I'd try to find ways to get him the football because, again, until they can find somebody who steps up and can be that reliable target, maybe it is Iowa Manor at some point. But teams are going to key in on Ridley. You got to find other targets out there. I mean, Lockett didn't do anything in that game. Is that a one-game thing? Can he be more productive, more dangerous this weekend? You would hope so. I mean, he didn't catch the ball on Sunday. So they're going to have more than that, obviously.
Another veteran Tyler coming on in.
Yeah.
For the late stages of a career, that's a surprise for sure. And yeah, I mean, I think it's there for Gunnar Helm. Are they going to get to the point where they've got a consistent crew producing? I mean, early in the season, you usually see some variance, and then you kind of settle into something.
We'll be joined by Seth Emerson from The Athletic. Coming up next, we'll look ahead to Tennessee and Georgia with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Looking ahead to the Vols and Georgia coming up this weekend at Neyland Stadium. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Seth Emerson from The Athletic. Seth, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Seth, obviously a lot of interesting takes from some Georgia fans on what they've seen from Gunnar Stockton to this point. This will be a true road test for him coming up in a hostile environment in Neyland Stadium on Saturday. So what have been your impressions of Gunnar Stockton to this point, and what are your expectations for him and that Georgia offense as they head into Neyland this Saturday?
Well, it's so hard to say when you play – two guarantee games at home to start the season. You almost look more back to last year and the 1.5 games you saw of him against Texas in the SEC Championship and Notre Dame and the Sugar Bowl. The first two games, you know, the concern about him is he hasn't been throwing downfield much. I wasn't at the first game. I was at LSU Clemson, but I was at the Austin Peay game because when you have a chance to cover Georgia versus Austin Peay, you just don't pass that
up.
You
do it.
Flies open. Let's go Peay.
And lucky for you, there's a nice weather delay in there too. So extra time.
I knew that I was going to be there a long time. So I just, I said that this is just an opportunity I have to go for. But I watched as there were receivers getting open downfield. So Georgia is calling it. But Stockton just wasn't taking it. He wasn't throwing those receivers. He was taking the checkdowns or he was running. And after the game, Kirby Smart was up front that they want him to stand in the pocket and throw the ball. Not every time. They want him to use his mobility. I think there is going to be a lot of rolling out to use his mobility because the offensive line is a question. But there were other times where they were calling plays where, you know, it's just better receivers this year. They added a few transfers, Zach Branch especially, the really dynamic slot guy who was at Southern Cal his first 2 years, Noah Thomas, an outside receiver for Texas A&M. They get Colby, who was on suspension almost all last year. So they've got their usual array of tight ends. So they've got receivers and skill position guys for him to throw to, and they want him to throw to him. So it's going to be interesting on Saturday, the approach, because, you know, they want him to do that. But on the other hand, they also want him to take care of the ball. And if they think it's going to be a relatively low scoring game, which history would say it would be between Tennessee and Georgia recently, that, you know, how much do they want him to push it? But, you know, another point, and I'll finish on this. Another point that Kirby has said is that, like, downfield passes are actually, like, they're not as, like, turnover prone. They're low percentage, but you make more mistakes when you're trying the shorter, more intermediate stuff. And I think they want him to open it up and take some shots.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Zachariah Branch. And also, those two guys, you know, Zachariah Branch, Nate Frazier, I feel like are obviously keys. How good is Branch, and what kind of season is Frazier, you think, going to have?
Well, Branch was really good starting out at USC and then kind of petered out. And so by the time he, along with his brother, Zion Branch, hit the portal, wasn't as big a deal. And so Georgia getting them, especially Zach Branch, has kind of gone under the radar. But you know, the thing with a Georgia offense is they're going to spread it around. So you're probably not going to see him be a 1,000-yard receiver, but he's got that ability. He's got game-breaking ability. The question is whether we're going to see an offense that's going to be, you know, throwing a lot of screens or short passes to guys like Branch and then see what they can do with the ball in space, or whether they're going to be able to turn them loose downfield and hit them. Frazier's their number one back. He was supposed to be teamed with Josh McCray, a more bruising guy, a transfer from Illinois, but he's been hurt. I don't know if he'll play. They've got running backs behind them. So they're, you know, they're good at running back and deep, at running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And I think Stockton is fine. I think Stockton can be fine. The question all along has been whether the blocking will be there. The O-line's the question. They were not good on the O-line last year. And yet, three of the starters from that not good O-line last year started as rookies in NFL Week 1 on Sunday. So, and a fourth one was on a roster, but inactive. So how are you better when you lost that kind of talent? And the O-line has been, you know, uneven blocking-wise. But again, it's hard to tell the first 2 weeks.
Well, and to that point, so the right side is banged up too, right? Juan Gaston, Ernest Green. How does that look, and how important is it for Georgia to have one or both of those guys in this matchup?
Green's the more important one. He's a right tackle. He's the more experienced guy. He was a starter when healthy last year. I think he could have played against Austin Peay, but, you know, it was Austin Peay. He actually suited up. Gaston's a true freshman when they don't really start true freshmen. They don't have to on the O-line or really anywhere. So for him to start the first game right out of the bat was a really good sign. Then he gets hurt, so that's not great. Yeah, but if they should get Green back, but like it affected cohesion. They really need to have a five, you know, and then you can rotate like a sixth or seventh, you know, and that kind of stuff. But they needed to be able to keep those guys healthy and develop some chemistry. And so it doesn't portend great things going into Neyland Stadium for game three when they haven't been able to look great on the O-line yet. And it's something that they probably should be game planning around until they get more confidence in the O-line.
So Seth, you know, as you know, Josh Heupel has done a good job of building Tennessee back up. They got in the college football playoff last year. They've taken down Alabama a couple of times under Heupel, but the Georgia matchup has not gone well for them. And last year's game probably closer than the score would indicate. But the bottom line is they've not even – not only have they not beat Georgia under Josh Heupel, they've not come within one score of beating Georgia under Josh Heupel. So what do you make of that? What do you make of Kirby Smart and this matchup and the success that he's had, not only in winning the games, but really limiting what Tennessee's been able to do on offense?
Yeah, I have a story on that that went up this morning on The Athletic that – you know, gets into, I think, what, you know, a lot of people have pointed out is that Kirby has done best against the Heupel offense. And, you know, there is actually, like other people pointed out, there's a pretty marked difference when you look at what Tennessee has done non-conference versus when they get into SEC and other power conference teams. But, you know, they put up a lot against Syracuse, which is a power conference team, maybe, this year. The short version of it is that Tennessee commits to run the ball, and that's a big part of their offense, but Georgia is big on stopping the run. So they stop the run, and that's essentially what happened in 2022 was they made, you know, Hendon Hooker one-dimensional and had to drop back a lot, and Georgia threw a lot at him and sacked him a lot and just was uncomfortable the whole time. But they haven't had Jalen Carter since then. But the last 2 years, Georgia's run defense, while it hasn't been great overall, or at least back to those 2021-22 standards, it's still been good against Tennessee. And so the other thing about it is, you know, the Tennessee offense is predicated on they spread you out. So they want you to spread out your defense, and then that creates running lanes, and they hit you with the run, and they play pace and everything. But Georgia has the talent to play single man coverage. They'll line up your cornerback with you, but they commit their front seven guys to staying in the box and stopping the run. And they, you know, the safeties play some bend but don't break, you know, keep you in front of you, you rely on their red zone percentage, or, you know, get some, you know, get them into some third and mediums and hit them with the pass rush. And so it's just been a good matchup for Georgia, but so much of it is predicated just on having the talent to stop it, and being built to stop it. And we'll see if the fifth game lines up with the fourth game. It's interesting. If you look at personnel, like it should, like Georgia still has, you know, its usual array of talent, five stars, blue chips on defense. And Tennessee's got, you know, a transfer quarterback, transfer running back, you know, but look at the results the first 2 weeks and Tennessee has looked really good. So we're about to find out if, you know, Josh Heupel has finally got a way to figure out this Georgia defense, or whether Kirby just has it figured out.
Who's the next, you know, freak off this Georgia defense? I mean, I know, like you said, five stars, a bunch of them go in the NFL, like C.J. Allen, Kristen Miller, yeah, K.J. Bolden. Who's the guy that people are going to be like, oh, man, look at that guy on Saturday?
Well, several. I mean, it's not like one guy. Christian Miller's a veteran defensive lineman who could have gone pro, but would have probably been like a, you know, second day, third day pick and decided to come back. So that was big for their D-line. They've got some other defensive linemen, guys named Jordan Hall and Elijah Griffin's a five-star freshman. K.J. Bolden's the big in the back there. Their cornerbacks, Dalen Everett, also could have gone pro and would have been kind of a fringe second day guy. So he came back. Ellis Robinson's a five-star recruit a year ago who's getting more playing time at cornerback, and those linebackers, like, they're really good at linebacker. C.J. Allen, Chris Cole, outside linebacker, Justin Williams, inside linebacker. They've got a lot of guys. They don't have the one guy that, like, you know, turns the whole thing, which is makes for the, you know, that's good for them. But, you know, they had even some moments, like the Austin Peay game was close because first, like, Georgia turned it over on the first possession. Nate Frazier fumbled it, and he's had some fumbles issues his year now in college. And then they scored on offense the next two. So they were on the verge of kind of running away with it, but then the defense started to give up some plays here and there. They kind of got bored, it seemed. And they had some issues like that. I mean, we don't know. Like, it's a loaded defense. It's very well coached. But last year, they just were a shutdown great defense twice against Texas. But Ole Miss got them. And Alabama got them in the first half, not the second half. So it's been a defense lately that, you know, makes just has just enough moments of like giving up a big play, which when you don't have like the offense that you had in 2022-2023 has been fatal in a couple games.
Well, Seth, it's going to be fun. We're looking forward to the game coming up on Saturday and appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. We will talk to you soon, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yep, Seth Emerson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Seth had to say, plus a very interesting story in The Athletic from our friend David Ubben. Basically, recapping to this point in the college football season, the first trade that we've seen in college football. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game has teamed up with Pella Windows and the Nashville Humane Association for a puppy pet adoption this Saturday at Pella, 256 East Main Street in Hendersonville from 10 to noon. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Appreciate Seth Emerson for being with us in the last segment. I was telling you off the air earlier in the show, I've somehow ended up on Georgia fan Twitter this week, Joe. And Kirby Smart is like a Jedi. Like, he has done a masterful job of convincing all these people that no one believes in them and that everybody thinks they're going to lose and that they're terrible and they're going 7-5 and they're missing the college football playoff. That's what I've noticed from Georgia fans this week is apparently everybody thinks Tennessee's going to come in and roll them, despite the fact that most people I see picking the game are picking Georgia and Georgia's favorite in the game. So, I mean, congratulations to Kirby Smart for what he's done to this fan base.
Yeah, he is. He is the Lou Holtz of this era in that way. Lou Holtz was amazing. Like, Rice is a tremendous team, you know. And then they beat Rice, you know, 78-3 or whatever the heck. But and also, like, the whole disrespect thing. I mean, this team is maybe not, I mean, I'd say probably not, like, the level of his best teams, right? Well, and we don't think so. We'll see. But, I mean, even those teams, he was trying to say, people were saying 6-6. I mean, what is this? Are we sure people aren't calling this team a 3-9 team? Yeah, I don't know.
Look, I mean, the 21-22 Georgia teams.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're probably in the conversation of best defenses in the history of the sport. Like, pretty good. So, like, that bar, it's tough to
replicate.
But, yeah, they're still pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're still loaded with talent, and he's a great coach, and he is. You know, Saban talked about that. I mean, he learned from Saban, and Saban was a – I don't remember – somebody way back in the day when I was a beat writer, there was a coach who definitely, and again, this is like the days of, you know, cutting out newspaper articles, but like actually had like fake newspaper articles put up on the bulletin board. Like, I don't remember exactly the, it's like, you know, whatever, just like totally made up quotes about how crappy his team was and stuff. I mean, coaches just they're trying to find everything they can to piss off their own players.
Kirby's in there like telling AI to generate some fake news, some material out there of,
well, those press conferences
suck.
Well, now we have these AI press conferences, right? Like, I saw Caleb Williams, like, yeah, you know, I'm total trash, and you know, Ben Johnson sucks too, and I'm like, wow, I guess that's probably fake, right? But it looks real.
Kirby Smart puts like Josh Heupel up there just talking so much crap about Georgia. Could happen. We'll see.
I bet you he does.
David Ubben, friend of the show, came out with a very interesting piece yesterday at The Athletic, basically going through the first trade in college football as through the first 2 weeks of the season. As we know around here, it's essentially a trade when you think about Nico Iamaleava to UCLA, Joey Aguilar to Tennessee, and we all know what went down in the spring. I want to read a couple of graphs from you just from this piece by Ubben. You know, 4 months and two games in, no one upgraded their situation as much as Aguilar, who took the reins of one of the most quarterback-friendly schemes in college football. And no one has taken a bigger hit than Iamaleava. Physically, fiscally, and any other Lee on the board, Iamaleava is at risk of becoming a cautionary tale in the name, image, and likeness era. It's a really good piece by Ubben, and he kind of goes through the whole saga here and goes through, you know, why Nico ended up at UCLA and the competing theories as to why that took place and all these different things. But goes through Aguilar and the situation that he's in, and now the opportunity that's coming up for him this Saturday against Georgia. I told you, like, if If he goes out there and beats Georgia, I mean, you're talking about immediately, like, just insane celebrity status in Tennessee football lore. So what do you make of Ubben's piece here of the situation for Joey Aguilar, Nico Iamaliava, and how that's returned for him through the first 2 weeks of the season?
Yeah, another the numbers here, key numbers. You know, the if it's true, there's a reported 1.2 mil, this is what he's making from UCLA in California, 12.3% income, state income tax, also cost of living difference, whereas in Knoxville, no state income tax, 2.2 million. And again, he wanted to go from 2.2 to 4. I'll say again, the hate watching of Nico, it's like, really, is it still like support your team? Also, another thing to point out, and I think this is where it's like multiple things being true, but our Ira Gorawara, who's an intern for us, wrote a really good story about the Iamaliava family. And honestly, they let her in more than they have let any reporter in. And trust me, many of us and many others in media have tried. And there's like no, you know, they've been very, very, I think, for sure, their family was like, they didn't want to be asked about the money for a long time. And then, yep, of course, it's like, and then certainly don't want to be asked about how you botched the whole situation. But one thing about that story is that his mother is battling stage 4 breast cancer, which is, that's news that I did not know. So, like, I don't doubt, you know, again, there's reason to go home. There are good things about going home. That's something, you know, these are human beings. Also, like we were talking about before, it's like they're also negotiating with schools that were not close to home. Miami, not close to home. And, you know, if they would have
– Oregon.
I mean, that's at least kind of. But, yeah, I mean, Miami, totally even farther away than Knoxville. So, you know, it's like the bottom line is there's nothing – they asked for more money. Yeah, I don't doubt that Big Nick also was mad with the support. So I'm sure that's true too.
Yeah.
But another thing that Ubben writes is that, you know, the belief in the program, the Tennessee program, is that if it was just up to Nico, that he'd still be there, and that there's still a lot of guys on that team, his former teammates, who were close to him. He's a good dude, you know? And that's what I hate about, like, the whole, oh, yeah, you suck, Nico, greedy, burr, burr, burr. I mean, just calm down, you know? His dad botched the situation. There's nothing wrong with asking for more money, but you got to understand the market. And when you perform like you did last year, now we're just repeating what we said before, but when you perform like you did last year, it doesn't warrant a big jump.
Well, and the bottom line is it looks like it's going to end up being an absolute disaster for him. Like, UCLA is absolutely terrible. You know, as Jared on the YouTube chat points out, if you watch that game against UNLV, he's getting killed out there. Like, it's just his
second half.
Line,
he was great in the second half.
He was, but he's just getting battered.
Yeah,
out there.
He's the most pressured QB in the nation.
And they're 0-2. You know, they got New Mexico coming up on Friday. I would assume that they're going to win that game, I guess. But I mean, look, he plays Penn State in a couple of weeks. Like, it's not going to go well. I mean, look, they're going to end up winning what, 3 games somewhere in that neighborhood,
like
3,
that.
4 games this year. And look, I have no idea what Tennessee is. We're going to find out a lot on Saturday. I do think that we have a baseline understanding of, like, Tennessee's got some talent. It's pretty good. Are they going to be a college football playoff team? I don't know. We'll see what happens on that front. But, you know, kind of one of the points that Ubben brings up in the article is, well, you're talking about trying to negotiate with Tennessee, yes, for the money part of it, but also part of it trying to upgrade your situation and trying to get more help on the offensive line, trying to get more help at wide receiver. And you've ended up at a place at UCLA where you just are totally devoid of all of that.
Yeah, it's so, you know, losing is one thing, but then not even really being able to, like, again, if you're on a, like, a team that has a crappy defense or whatever and you lose a lot of games, it stinks, it's not fun. But, like, if you have an offense around you, you can produce, or you can at least, like, develop as a quarterback, show off your skills, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a situation this bad, like, it's just not going to, like, it's going to limit you, and there are already questions about you from NFL scouts. I know we have something, too, you know, Ira wrote about, like, you know, sort of the wait-and-see approach of from Dame Brugler, you know, talking about, like, NFL scouts and stuff. And it's like, this is just, I mean, this is not going to, this particular year at least, you know, it's just, it's not going to look good. So how are you going to, how are you going to help yourself?
Yeah.
You know, you need to be in a better situation. Like, no quarterback in a terrible, terrible situation is going to look good.
I mean, technically, he could come out after this year and try to go pro. I just don't think that that's – I mean, I don't think it's going to – I don't think it's in the cards right now. Like, it's been so bad, and I don't think it's going to get better when they get into Big Ten play, right? Like, it's not like, oh, just wait till Big Ten play starts, then we won't be playing, you know, Ohio State and Penn State, who they have to play this year. I mean, it's going to be bad for that team.
Yeah, and, you know, there's people – some people have him as like a third rounder, the number five QB. And I don't think it's going to go up.
No.
Because this year's going to go so poorly for him.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Rex Road's got some questions he wants answered. And we're getting into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.